It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If I lost, I'd be a very gracious loser. If I lost, I would say I lost, and I'd go to Florida, and I'd take it easy, and I'd go around, and I'd say I did a good job. But you can't ever accept when they steal and rig and rob. Can't accept.
That was an incredible rally that took place in southern Georgia Saturday night, I think it was. I don't know if you watched it, but it was amazing. As usual, President Trump was down there in support of Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, who have their runoff elections against Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff. And last night was a debate. We're going to talk about that in a second. But there was the president spelled it out, what's happening. I have to say, yes, I want him to prevail. I don't hide that. I thought I was so happy that he was out among Americans and not in D.C., surrounded by the swamp that swallows you up whole, chews you up and spits you out. Even in the White House, people are, you know, it's just a vortex. It truly is a real thing when you talk about the swamp. So I was glad that he was out with the people. Melania looked absolutely radiant. She introduced him, and it was just he had a very peaceful smile on his face. And I was glad for that. I think it encouraged him. And he's right. In fact, there are about 4 states where it is possible that the results may be reversed. And I'm going to talk about that a lot today in the show, but I want to tell you a couple of other things first. So yesterday, I've told you, I'm not watching Fox. I'm watching bits and pieces of it. Maria Bartiromo is still one of my favorites, and I still love Tucker and others, and I have no time to itemize everyone that I like and don't like. I'm not going to do that. But Chris Wallace, I don't watch him at all, but there was a clip that came my way. And Chris invited the Health and Human Services Secretary, Alex Azar. And Alex is a real gentleman, a nice guy. And, of course, Chris was, it's all about COVID, you see, the whole world. It's nothing else is happening. It's just COVID. So that's what Chris wanted to talk to Alex Azar about. And but you'll notice that something else kind of got inserted into the conversation. Let's listen.
If President Trump had worn a mask then and urged everyone to wear a mask then, back in April, the way Joe Biden is right now, wouldn't we be in much better shape?
Well, Chris, I welcome Vice President Biden to the club. Since the middle of April, the president's guidelines for reopening have called for wearing masks.
Well, he's the president-elect, sir.
The president has called masks, patriotic acts. Every one of his top advisors, we are out there saying, wear your masks. We talk about the data. You know, Chris, at 1 meter, if 2 people wear the mask, it can reduce viral transmission by 72%, protecting both the source and the recipient. We've got the data. Masks work. We encourage people, please wear a mask when you can't engage in social distancing.
But first of all, it's the president-elect Joe Biden, Secretary Azar. And secondly, the fact is the president said on the first day, April 3rd, he wasn't going to wear a mask. He didn't wear a mask in public for 3 months until July. And just last night at that rally in Georgia, not only didn't he wear a mask, but I was watching the rally. Thousands of people packed together. None I could see wearing a mask. That is a direct violation of what the CDC and you were recommending.
So 2 things are bothering Chris. First of all, the president doesn't wear a mask. The people that come to his rallies don't wear a mask. They don't wear a mask. They don't wear a mask. And, of course, he is still remembering how upset he was when he moderated that debate. And the Trump family, according to him, refused to wear masks. That's actually, they said that was different and that Chris got that wrong, but whether he did or not, I don't know, but that is a big deal for Chris, and he was concerned that they were putting him at risk, him, the all-important anchor from Fox, Chris Wallace, they were putting him at risk, and he did say that. It was amazing to me. It was all about Chris, and so that's why he was so angry. And so he's still on that, but here's the deal. The other thing that he cares a great deal about is that the president hasn't encouraged it, but he hasn't done it the way Joe Biden has done it, President-elect Joe Biden. And so he corrects what Health and Human Services Secretary three times in that conversation. He is president-elect. He is president-elect Joe Biden, sir. President-elect Joe Biden. So you see how this goes. And, you know, just apart, yes, I want President Trump to win. But apart from that, I have to say that Joe Biden is not president-elect until the electors are certified. He just isn't. There's not an official office of that until that bar has been crossed. And that's going to be December the 14th is when the electors do their thing. It's December the 14th. So he's not president-elect until this is finished. But Chris doesn't think so. And the other thing, of course, and okay, I should address this. Alex Azar, of course, said that masks work and he was trying to push back. I have to say this because I've said so much about this. For whatever reason, the Trump bits and pieces of the Trump administration, including Vice President Pence, have felt necessary to jump through a lot of hoops in order to please the masters in D.C. I still stand by my, based on what I've read, yeah, I know I'm not the Health and Human Services Secretary, how very bold of me. I've just that I am reading from other sources that masks have not made much of a difference. And I've told you this before. It's that the rates of infection seem to be the same, generally the same, where people mask and social distance and where people don't. That's the bottom line of this. And I believe that's true. So, the most important thing there was Chris just had to correct Secretary of Health and Human Services that Joe Biden is the president-elect, sir. He's the president-elect. He's the president-elect, sir. You know, so if you say it often enough, it makes it true. It's just amazing to me, and that's the reason why many of us don't watch Fox anymore. And last night at the rally, not last night, but Friday, Saturday, I should say, at the rally in Georgia, people were very upset with Fox. There's a little video that I watched of people gathering around them and saying basically things like, Fox does not decide who the president is. Fox does not do that. And someone else said, "We trusted you. We trusted you." So, I mean, it was polite, but it was, and then someone started, you know, saying Fox is fake news. So Fox is really getting a big blowback. And in fact, I guess I've already thrown my piece aside, but their ratings are way, way down. After the election night, they really suffered from the way they handled that, and they deserve it, I have to say. And, you know, I'm saying this from a person who used to work. I used to work for Fox. I was a contributor for probably about 8 years, and loved Fox and loved them a long time before I ever became a contributor. When I was just a citizen, I just thought they were wonderful when I was on radio in Chicago. So it's hard. And Roger Ailes interviewed me personally. I could go on and on. Lots of friendships there. But they have let us down. We trusted them, and they have let us down. But, of course, the press is a problem. And as a matter of fact, last week, James O'Keefe of Project Veritas, we didn't get much of a chance to talk about this, but James infiltrated a Zoom meeting between CNN producers and the chief of CNN, Jeff Zucker. And he's been listening, monitoring their conversations. And so he's done a whole series of undercover videos, and then he finally broke in on their call and said, you know, I've been monitoring you for several months now. It's been interesting. But one of the little clips from that I want you to hear, it's a discussion of President Trump and how they should cover him. This is clip 17. Let's listen.
Despite our own investigations into widespread voter fraud, CNN President Jeff Zucker still labels Trump as a bigger threat to our national security. Play the clip.
These eerie Pennsylvania allegations of backdating ballots were retracted.
Trump continuing to undermine election integrity with baseless claims of fraud. Okay, and he's continuing to do it. And that leads to the question of whether or not Trump himself is a national security threat in light of what he's doing and in light of what he did in the debate.
Hey, Jeff, it's David. I just wanted to make one point about contextualizing Ben Ginsburg. He's without a doubt the preeminent election lawyer on the Republican side. and probably one of the most preeminent election lawyers in America. He's also had a front row seat to every Republican election initiative for the past 4 years. If he says voter fraud isn't a thing, that's kind of the end of the story. And we ought to treat that as a definitive answer as we cover the story throughout. Our refrain ought to be, Ben Ginsburg was across us for 4 years and says it doesn't exist.
All right, so the bottom line is this is their planning meeting. These are the producers. They don't know the world is listening, but James O'Keefe was in on that and pulled that sound. So Jeff Zucker is saying that President Trump is a threat and that they are, the voter fraud is a myth and they're not going to cover it. They also, one of the other things they talked about was this whole story about Hunter Biden. We're not going to cover that. That's like a dream of Rudy Giuliani. A perfect dream right before the election of something he might hope that happens, and we're not going to cover it. So that's the CNN, another major news source for people. So last night, Rudy Giuliani was on with Maria Bartiromo, yesterday morning, actually, and they had an interesting exchange, and I want you to hear it. It's clip two.
Rudy, this is pretty extraordinary, and obviously these are very, very serious charges. How come the media does not report that you have this evidence? I mean, we're looking at the videos of people pulling ballots out from under a table. We're looking at the affidavits that you are presenting. And yet, I mean, the Wall Street Journal this morning, the title, Trump uses rally for Georgia Senate candidates to push unsupported claims of voting fraud. And we're looking at video right now of the people in Georgia, which you just referred to, that in two in the morning, they said, everybody clear out the room. And yet you've got four individuals here that are pulling suitcases out from under a table. Why is it that the media continues to report that there's unsupported evidence here when every day you're out talking about these situations?
Maria, I wish I knew the answer to that. Part of it is bias. Part of it is corruption. Part of it's laziness. Part of it is just inexplicable. How you can say this is unsupported when there are now tape after tape after tape. There are tapes of those same women taking USB drives and getting information out of the machines illegally. Those were played yesterday in Georgia. And nobody bothers to play that. I mean, there are 1,000 affidavits. 1,000 affidavits. This is a massive fraud all throughout the country. There are 1,000 affidavits of people who observed a fraudulent act.
Yep. It sounds like you're counting on the state legislatures to recognize this. What about the Supreme Court? I know that Congressman...
All right, so that was Maria. I just thought that was interesting. Of course, I could have said the same thing to you, but I want to emphasize that we have good reason now to think that this election could be the declared result by, you know, Chris Wallace of Fox News, he's the expert, that Joe Biden as president-elect could actually be overturned. There's plenty of evidence now. But if that happens, we have to understand that most Americans, well, half of them, I don't think most, I think half of America is paying a lot of attention not to Fox, but to other outlets like One America News, Newsmax, the Epoch Times, all these other great outlets, Breitbart, and they are informed, but the other half are clueless. They think the only thing that matters right now is COVID and the vaccine and all those issues, which we will get into also. They think that the horse is out of the barn, that Joe Biden is appointing all of these people to serve him in various posts, and that's the focus of their attention, and they will be shocked. And angry, probably, if and when a result is changed, and a different result than what they thought is declared. I think it's probably, and because we know the media is not, you know how they're going to cover it. They're going to claim President Trump stole the election or something. They'll think of some moniker because that's what they do. And so I would suggest to all of you now that you start talking to people and you need to let them know that what they're hearing is not the whole story. Share with them. Talk with them. It's time for us to make the case because the media is not going to do it. When we come back, I'm going to give you a state-by-state rundown of those contested states, which is pretty amazing. Georgia and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. I'm not sure. Michigan. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
Here's a great thing to consider doing right now before the end of the year. Call MediShare and find out just how much you would save by switching to MediShare, the affordable alternative to health insurance. When you call, you'll get some good news and probably be very happily surprised too. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. It's so worth it to at least find out. And you'll see why more than 400,000 people are already members. MediShare is a Christian community that shared more than $4 billion in each other's healthcare costs. It really is remarkable, and they're very easy to talk to. And here's the thing. If you join before the end of the year, they'll waive your new member fee. That's another $170 you'll save. I'll give you the number here in a second. The call, and you'll get a price within 2 minutes. And again, the deadline is December 31st, so call now. You'll save even more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Hi, it's Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, the words that John pens early in his gospel are truly comforting, aren't they? Knowing that God fulfilled his promise of bringing Jesus to us and that he's with us and for us. And yet, you know what? Most evangelicals outside of the U.S. in places where Bible League serves, like Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, have never read those words. They can't open their Bible on a daily basis and be reminded of God's precious promises. So how wonderful this Advent season if many Christians around the world could open their own Bible and read for themselves, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Learn how you can be a blessing to these believers praying for a Bible by calling 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD, or visit sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org.
Giving a Bible to somebody is the greatest gift you can give somebody in life.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
At Liberty University, we believe in honoring service. That's why we offer first responder and military communities deep discounts on all of our 450-plus online programs. Military students, veterans, and spouses pay just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and $275 to $300 per credit hour for graduate and PhD courses. First responders receive a 25% tuition discount, and those who qualify may be able to use both discounts for even greater savings. It's our way to say thank you for all you do. To learn more, text AGREE to 49595.
The United States could soon look like a Middle Eastern country if two U.S. Senate Democrats have their way. Senators Ed Markey and Richard Blumenthal introduced legislation that would require states to implement mask policies, calling it a moral mandate. Both men are Democrats. The legislation is called the Encouraging Masks for All Act, released on the day before Thanksgiving, hoping the average American would not notice. Well, we noticed. The legislation has nothing to do with public safety, but it has everything to do with controlling the American people. The fact is, most Americans are wearing masks, and there are many medical experts who contend that masks are not protecting you or your family. And should Democrats win the Senate races in Georgia, we will be one step closer to forcing our citizens to wear mandatory head coverings in public. Is that the kind of America you want your kids to grow up in? I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What you had in Wisconsin is the same thing that you had every place else, except they have this additional law where you have to have an application. They excluded Republican poll watchers from watching absentee ballots being counted and mail-in ballots being counted. They excluded Republican poll watchers from the polls. They engaged in backdating ballots. Several witnesses testified how they were trained how to backdate ballots. They registered people who weren't registered under different names. Each one of them has, in one degree or another, almost the same pattern of activity, one a little bit more than others. This was a pattern that was set by somebody in Washington because everybody else carried it out exactly in the same way. And they did it in the crooked cities. They didn't do it everywhere. They did it in Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh, in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Atlanta. They went to places where there's a lot of corruption and the courts are not exactly the fairest. Let's put it that way. I mean, I don't know who is in charge of it. All I can tell you is it looks like a very well-planned very well executed situation. For example, at the same time, at 3:30 in the morning on the night of the election, right after the election, a truck pulled into the back of the center in Detroit and delivered 100,000 phony ballots that all got counted for Biden. At the very same time, in Atlanta, they threw the people out of the center, they closed the doors, they went under the counter and brought out about 70 or 80,000 ballots and counted those phony ballots. Some of them counting them six and seven times. All that's on tape. Happened at the same time in two different places. That wasn't part of the pattern.
All right, so that was Rudy Giuliani, and he's, of course, describing, and that was with Maria again, what's been happening and the pattern that they're seeing. I just would say this one thing. We might have some sort of an idea about who's coordinating, because we talked a bit just last week about David Duflof, who was Barack Obama's former campaign manager in 2008. And David, right before this election, wrote a book called A Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump. And I mentioned to you at the time that I thought this seemed odd to me. This is like, this is a way to get this out into the bloodstream of the left. How are we going to do this? This is the plan, the roadmap, and it's exactly what took place in these various states. So I think we might, you know, if somebody actually wanted to find out who's coordinating this, you might go to David Duflof and ask him, what did you have in mind for that book? Who were you writing it for? Who's reading it? Who did you distribute it to, or who are you talking to? I would ask him that. I want to tell you, something very important. Over the weekend, yesterday, I believe that we found out Rudy Giuliani has tested positive for COVID, and he's being treated in a hospital. And so it's important to this story. Isn't it something? These people, of course, are, you know, they're laying it all on the line, and they're working long, long hours. And Rudy's not young anymore. And so, it is reason to be concerned. I'm sure he'll get the very best treatment. And, of course, it's reason to be concerned because that sidelines him from what's happening. So we need to pray for Rudy and anyone who we think is sick from COVID, who certainly is at risk. Just testing positive to me is a ho-hum. Doesn't really mean anything. But having symptoms and being older, that's a serious thing. All right, so we need to pray for him. All right, so I want to give you a rundown of what's happening in the states. Now, Wisconsin has been kind of quiet. And by that, I mean the state legislature. In responding to the things that are happening, the Wisconsin Supreme Court just ruled last week that they decided not to hear the case that was brought before them. They said that it needs to go to the circuit court, that the group that's finally bringing the lawsuit needs to go to the circuit court. Problem is with that, if it goes through that process, it'll be way past January before it gets heard. And so now Wisconsin lawmakers, the Republicans hold both chambers, are finally stepping up. And I want to tell you what they're doing, because this is new for Wisconsin. They will hold public hearings on election irregularities. The State Assembly Committee on Campaigns and Elections will take place on December the 11th at the Wisconsin State Capitol. And it's going to deal with the investigation into numerous irregularities with the 2020 general election. And that's the statement by Representative Ron Tussler. He's a Republican who chairs the committee. So it's going to include testimony from eyewitnesses, experts, and election officials. I have to tell you, that's a big deal. Wisconsin is an unusual state. I'm very familiar with Wisconsin because Chicago borders, you know, they're very close. And my husband is a Packer fan, and his dad was born and raised in Wisconsin. So, and plus all of my years of singing, I've sang all over Wisconsin, and I have lots of friends in Wisconsin. So yes, we know Wisconsin. It doesn't matter. Let me just say that Wisconsin is kind of a unique bird. They're independent in many ways. They are the home of communism in this country out of the University of Wisconsin. But they also have lots of conservatives and lots of Christians. So as with all states, it's a mixed bag. But generally speaking, they have, because it's a smaller state, they have a talk show host whose name escapes me in this moment, but he hates President Trump, and he's had a tremendous influence, I think, on people's minds. And so they have Paul Ryan, who hates President. Well, let's just say, I don't know if he hates him. He does everything he can to stop him and to undermine him and to make sure he's gone. He's on the decision board for Fox News, just Paul Ryan, former Speaker of the House from Wisconsin. So a lot of things in Wisconsin that don't trend Trump, that's for sure. They have their own mind, and it isn't, for the most part, it has not been in support of President Trump. So they are now, though, having this committee. That's not an exclusive, you know. Ron Johnson, the senator, is certainly in favor of President Trump. So it's not a blanket statement, but it's kind of a rule of thumb. So it is a very big deal. By the way, 20,000 votes separate Joe Biden from President Trump in Wisconsin. And let me just say, the Epoch Times is going to live stream that event on December the 11th. So you might want to watch that. I always tell you the Epoch Times is a good source, and it is. That's Wisconsin. So that's a big deal. And then in Michigan, this is really amazing, because a lower court judge allowed the Trump team and others to do an audit of the Dominion tabulator system. So it took place yesterday with Bailey, Antrim County Clerk Cheryl Guy, County Administrator Pete Garwood, County Attorney Hadir Kazim, three county commissioners, a county IT technician, and a member of the Sheriff's Department. Also present were seven members of the Allied Security Operations Group. That's the group affiliated with Trump's litigation team. And this is what they found. You know what? I'm going to have to do this by memory, because that page is not there. So basically what they saw, I believe it was, this is a small county, the one they're talking about. They found that even though they put in votes for President Trump and they put in the votes for Joe Biden, the same amount of votes, the machine came back with Trump. They added 37 votes to Joe Biden and took away 37 votes from President Trump. The machine did that. And so that's what they found when they audited that machine. So that's a very big deal, and I wanted to tell you about it. We'll see. I'm sure you'll hear more about it. Well, no. Wait, let me change that. I'm sure you won't hear more about that. But for those of you in Michigan, that's a very big deal. And so, again, watch for the outlets that you trust, One America News, Newsmax, to cover that so that you can find out more about it. All right. Now, Arizona is in a very different place. Arizona had their hearing last week. And on the same day that Arizona certified former Vice President Joe Biden as the winner, with just over 10,000 votes, it's 11 electoral votes in Arizona, there was a hearing. Now, it wasn't an official hearing, a formal legislative hearing. It took place in a hotel, which is what some of them have been doing. But it had members of both houses in the hearing, and the witnesses were assigned affidavits, you know, so that they there was a penalty perjury if they did perjure themselves. So there were some really important things that came out in that hearing, and I want to share just a few of them before I give you an update on what's happening in Arizona. Retired Army Colonel Phil Waldron, who was a cybersecurity expert, was terrific. I listened to his testimony, at least some of it. He testified that an anonymous email from a Pima County tech provider alleged that 35,000 votes were illegitimately given to Democratic candidates in that county. But you know what? There's actually more detail to that, so hang with me. Waldron says the person that emailed wanted to remain anonymous, but had enough concern that he wanted to send this to the Criminal Division of the U.S. Justice Department. Of course, if this allegation is true, 35,000 votes would, of course, be more than three times enough to flip Arizona. But there's more to his story. And as a matter of fact, at that point, the data does show a spike, and it coincides with the time that this guy described, or this girl, whoever. We weren't aware of this email until after the fact, after that spike. So there were approximately 35,000 fraud votes added to each Democratic candidate's vote totals. The candidates impacted included county, state, federal election candidates. The anonymous person also alleged Democratic Party members invited him or her to a meeting on September 10th and outlined a plan to add those votes. And it goes into great detail. I ask, how in the world will 35,000 votes be kept hidden from being discovered? And they said that because they're going to distribute those votes, it will be embedded across the entire registered voter range and will not exceed the registered vote count. And so they had it all worked out, and he or she continues his oration of what happened. Now, of course, unless he, you know, is willing, the person is willing to testify or give his name, that's going to be hard to prove, but that's huge. That, you know, that even might mean that Mark Kelly might not be the senator, that it might be Martha McSally, because it said all the down ballot races that they added 35,000 votes up front on all the Democratic candidates. That's pretty amazing. So that's one thing that came out of the Arizona hearing. And again, unless the person who wrote that email is willing to come forward, that's a problem. Nevertheless, you need to know what was said in that testimony. So top state officials, including Arizona's Republican Governor Doug Ducey, announced the certification and that Biden was the winner of the state's electoral votes. I think he did that at the same time the hearing was going on. Now, what's that all about? Really, what is that all about? He said, "Today we signed the canvas for the 2020 election in Arizona. I'm grateful to the voters, the county election offices, the county recorder's offices, and the poll workers across the state for their dedication to the success of our election system." Maybe not so much. And maybe we're going to get to the bottom of this. All right, there's more to that particular report, but I want to get to the latest on Arizona. I got this early this morning in my inbox. Members of the Arizona legislature are going to make a joint statement calling for decertification of the 2020 election. And that's going to happen today at 3:45 p.m. That's Arizona time. So you have to figure out where that is from you. 3:45 Arizona time. It's more than two dozen members and members-elect of the Arizona legislature. They're going to make a joint statement in front of the state capitol to discuss the urgent need to decertify the results of the 2020 election. And then it has a whole list of the members. And so that's kind of the headline. They're having, again, this rally, a Protect the Vote rally, in addition to that statement, from 3 to 5, that's Arizona time, in the Capitol Courtyard, and that is today. So that's something you'll want to be watching for, and if you have friends in Arizona, you might want to get this to them. And actually, Adam, let's put this news release on our Facebook page and also the announcement of their Protect the Vote rally, in case we have people who have friends and relatives in Arizona, and they might want to get that to them. Pennsylvania, this is a very big deal. This is a very big deal. Please, just I hope I can make it clear. Of course, Pennsylvania has had a couple of lawsuits already, and the most well-known is a lawsuit that was brought by Mike Kelly. He is a congressman, and they brought a case that this one's different. It's not about how the vote was carried out. It's about how mail-in voting was carried out. And according to this lawsuit, it is the Supreme Court and the legislature ordered mail-in balloting rules that did not comport with what the Constitution of Pennsylvania says. So they don't have the authority to do that, and that was the basis of Mike Kelly, and there's another person on that lawsuit as well. So the Supreme Court, a lower court rejected, wouldn't hear it. Then they took it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court rejected it. Now you have to understand that the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is extremely liberal. They've done all kinds of I wish I could think of an example, but they have done lots of things like this in the past, and so they're not a reliable court. And just to give you some perspective, the number of mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania grew from 266,208 4 years ago to 2.6 million in 2020. And they sort of did away with their stipulations and their regulations for making sure that these mail-in ballots were accurate. And so that's the beef. So so here's what's happened. Justice Alito, Supreme Court, has moved up the Supreme Court deadline in this particular case. They're going to be hearing it this Tuesday. Oh, no. He's asked officials in Pennsylvania to file their briefs this Tuesday at 9 a.m. in response to that lawsuit. And that's Representative Mike Kelly's lawsuit. And that is within what's called the safe harbor that requires states to certify before December 14th. So that's a very big deal. Of course, Sam Alito is a Supreme Court justice, and Pennsylvania is his home state. So it sort of signals that the Supreme Court is, my take on this is that the Supreme Court is very interested in this case. So stay tuned. It's fascinating. It's really getting interesting, and that's why we need to let our friends know this thing is not over. Whatever you're hearing, it is not over. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Listen to Don. Tune in every week.
Dr. Greg Smalley of Focus on the Family.
Listen to the wisdom this man gives and emulate that. Because, Don, you do that so well. I definitely have learned over 20-plus years that we've been doing radio together so many things from you. So find a guy that you look up to and just start learning.
Encouragement Live with Don Hawkins. Saturdays at 7.05 p.m. Central, 8.05 Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word, and we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Rise and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a desert place." My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. At the height of a Holy Spirit outpouring in Samaria, where the gospel was being preached with great power and droves of people were converting to follow Christ, the Lord instructed Philip to leave Samaria and head south to Gaza. Philip didn't know a divine appointment awaited him. Through his ministry to the Ethiopian eunuch, the gospel would spread to Africa. He left the crowd to serve one. I call this step-down faith. It's easy to step up for the attention and applause of the masses, but do we have step-down faith?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Electoral College will meet on December 14 to pick a president. With all the legal confusion due to election fraud, what if it can't produce a winner on that day? According to the 12th Amendment of the Constitution, if no candidate gets a majority of the Electoral College vote on December 14, the election is sent to the House of Representatives to hold its own election, and the House is to do so immediately on that very day. Each state delegation in the House gets one vote. The good news for Trump supporters is that Republicans have a majority in 26 state delegations and Democrats just 22, with four delegations evenly split. If delegations remain faithful, the House will send Donald Trump back to the White House by a vote of 26 to 22. How does that sound?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Rarely, if ever, has a government initiative with more strategic importance been unveiled in a more low-key way than a fact sheet issued by the State Department on Saturday. The facts thus revealed about the Chinese Communist Party's deep penetration of our capital markets, however, are likely to be shocking to most American investors and a stunning rebuke to those who have put our money into what the government calls, quote, malign PRC companies, unquote. According to State's fact sheet, large numbers of such CCP-tied companies are either in their own right or via subsidiaries tapping U.S. exchanges for capital. That means, quote, the Chinese Communist Party's threat to American national security extends into our financial markets and impacts American investors, unquote. The State Department identified U.S. indexes and the exchange-traded funds that wrap them, exposed as these malign companies' underwriters must divest such assets now. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The thing we are simpatico on our philosophy of government and simpatico on how we want to approach these issues that we're facing. And so I don't have, and when we disagree, it'll be just like, so far it's been just like when Barack and I did. It's in private. She'll say, I think we should do A, B, C, or D. And I'll say, I like A, don't like B and C. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. But, and I, like I told Barack, if I reach something where there's a fundamental disagreement we have based on a moral principle, I'll develop some disease and say I have to resign.
So that was something that got a little bit of attention last week when Joe Biden said, like with Barack, Kamala and I have this great relationship, but like with Barack, if something should separate us, well, I'll just say I have a disease and I'll resign. So it just kind of coupled with the fact that they have the Kamala Harris during before the election was final. Referred to herself as the president, and her husband said, introduced himself to a big group, I am married to the future president of the United States. We can see where this is going. You can see where this is going. Do not think you haven't been warned. I think people think that, you know, good old Joe is going to be president. He's not. First of all, I would bicker with that good old Joe description, but if that's what you think, it's going to be Kamala Harris. Not sure what you think about her. But I bet you don't have the same high opinion. And so that's kind of the reality of what we're facing here. So I want to talk to you just for a second about Georgia, because there was more information on Georgia than any place else. Before I get into Georgia, I have to correct myself. I have to correct myself because Michigan, the judge did grant the Trump campaign a forensic audit of 22 Dominion tabulator systems. To my knowledge, we do not have results of that yet. That happened last night. So I was mistaken about that. It's in Georgia where they found the Dominion system flipping votes, and that was in Ware County. Rob Hurst is a CPA. This is what he tweeted. Ware County, Georgia has broken the Dominion algorithm. Using sequestered Dominion equipment, Ware County ran an equal number of Trump votes and Biden votes through the tabulator, and the tabulator reported a 26% lead for Biden. Okay, so that puts it pretty concisely. And then just to give you a little bit more information, this is by Voter Georgia. Now, I don't know anything about this organization. It was sent to me by someone I trust. That's all I can say about Voter Georgia. Announced today, it has confirmed the Dominion Democracy Suite 5.5 system used throughout Georgia flipped dozens of votes cast in at least one county for President Trump to former President Joe Biden during the November 3rd, 2020 election. Dominion vote flipping from Trump to Biden was previously believed to have occurred only in Antrim County, Michigan, where the system swapped 6,000 votes from Trump to Biden. But in Georgia, Ware County Elections Director confirmed that the recently completed audit shows the total electronic tally vote shorted Donald Trump 37 votes and added those 37 votes to totals for Joe Biden. That represents 26% of the county. It's a small county. It's only not even 15,000 votes. So you can see what a difference that makes. So this Voter Georgia goes on to say, even when there was a dispute, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger ordered counties to reset their machines for the U.S. Senate race, which destroyed potential evidence of tabulation malware. So Secretary Raffensperger forced Georgia counties to enter their audit results into a centralized Arlo system rather than keep their own data sources. Virginia Voter Georgia, which is the organization, polled all 159 counties and found roughly 150 of them had no electronic totals for their own hand count audit. So in other words, they submitted these vote tallies to a machine, which was called Arlo, rather than keeping their own tallies. And they further investigated. Arlo was created by Voting Works, whose founder, Ben Adida, posted anti-Trump profanity on social media. Same is true for Dominion's Eric Coomer, which we had quite a long conversation about that last week. He was discovered by a businessman in Colorado who had infiltrated Antifa, and Eric Coomer was part of Antifa, hates Donald Trump, and worse. And so, he is an executive with Dominion, and also their vice president of systems, strategy, and security. Anyway, they have discovered actual evidence that Dominion is flipping votes. Dominion was flipping votes in Georgia. So now here's an interesting, I did not know this. I don't know who Garland Favorito is. He's the guy who runs Vote Georgia. He was supposed to testify before the state legislature last week, but the Republican leader of the committee blocked his testimony. And so who knows what's going on there? I would say this, that Raffensperger was on, what was he on last night? He was on ABC with George Papadopoulos. And I want you to hear, just listen to Brad Raffensperger. He is the Republican Secretary of State who claims there's no problem, nothing to see, who ordered the machines to recalibrate, which means that you can never detect fraud. And so people are saying, what's going on here? I want you to hear what he sounds like and assess for yourself what you think about his credibility. This is clip 8.
We are joined now by Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. Secretary Raffensperger, thank you for joining us this morning. In addition to claiming victory, the president is pressuring the governor of your state to call a special session of the state legislature to try to overturn the results. You're a conservative Republican. You wanted President Trump to win. Can you explain why what he's saying and doing now is, in your view, wrong?
Well, good morning, George. The people of Georgia spoke in this election, and obviously I'm a conservative Republican, disappointed in the results, but I said we'll count every legal vote and work hard to make sure that no illegal votes are counted, and that's what we've been doing. I don't believe that there's the will in the General Assembly for a special session.
So there, you don't expect the special session to take place on Tuesday? I know there's a petition out there to try to call for it, and I know the governor has refused.
Well, that's something that's not my, that's beyond my office's calling. That's really the governor and the General Assembly, and I'm sure they'll have conversations. But at the end of the day, what they're really trying to say is if they did that, is they would be then nullifying the will of the people. If you look at how the elections turned out here in Georgia, President Trump got 10% less votes in Cherokee County, which is a rich red county in this election cycle. Whitfield County up in northwest Georgia, less than 4.5%. And so really, at the end of the day, the voice of the people were spoken. I'm disappointed as a conservative Republican also.
Your office has investigated claims of fraud. What have they found?
We've never found systemic fraud, not enough to overturn the election. We have over 250 cases right now. We reached out to the governor and asked for additional manpower resources with GBI. It gives us additional reach so we can finish up these investigations quickly. But right now, we don't see anything that would overturn, you know, the will of the people here in Georgia.
You had the hand audit. You had the machine recounts. The president is trying to make an issue now of what he calls signature verification. What's at play there?
Well, I just read Governor Scott Walker said on Facebook that this upcoming election, we need to do signature match. We always have been doing signature match. In fact, I strengthened signature match. If you filled out a paper application then, and that came back with a signature, we matched it then. And then we went ahead, when you send in your ballot, we matched it again. And I'm the first Secretary of State to ever stand up an online portal for absentee ballot applications, which connects us with photo ID. And so we've strengthened that. We've also done training with our election officials through the GBI signature match learning and techniques that they use to verify signatures. So we've strengthened signature match in Georgia. We'll continue to do that, follow the law.
So, of course, he keeps telling us he's a conservative Republican. The problem is on the signature match, there should be three verifications. When someone wrote to get an absentee ballot, that signature should match the signature on the ballot. And that's what they were not checking. They were checking the outside envelope and the request for a ballot. And they threw away the envelopes. So there was no way to cross-match them. So that's absolutely what he just said is not true. And when they did the recount, they just used the same bad data they had before. Plus, the ballots that were counted by that machine were just recounted by that machine. So any faulty tabulations were just recalibrated or just tabulated. So I want to tell you what came out in the hearing last week, just to give you an idea. Now, this has nothing to do with voting machines. It has to do with just plain old election fraud. In Georgia, 2,056 felons illegally voted. 66,248 people under the age of 18 voted. 2,423 weren't even registered at all. 1,043 voters used a P.O. box. They didn't have an address. 4,926 voters voted past the regulation date, past the date. 10,315 died before the election. 395 voters voted in two states. 15,700 voters moved out of state. 40,279 voters changed the county and didn't re-register to vote. That is a total of 141,329 illegally cast ballots that we can, that people can verify. And the current margin of Biden's margin in Georgia is 12,670 votes. So it's just, and that doesn't even include if their Dominion, the vote fraud can be, the voter technology can be proven in Georgia with Dominion. So last night, President Trump, as I understand it, had a conversation with Governor Brian Kemp, asking him again to call a session of the legislature to overturn the state's election results. But as of last night, Brian Kemp has refused to do that. He's not going to do it. I don't know what the next step is in Georgia, but I'm sure the people down there are going to find some next step. And on a lighter note, I just want to tell you something. I think this was funny because, you know, we need to laugh sometimes. In that rally on Saturday night with President Trump down there and and it was a rally again for Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, but he did talk about the voting situation because we need to talk about both. I don't understand how many Republicans think that President Trump, the election for president and the one that just took place and all the other down ballot races too, we should just move on. Come on, let's just move on. But what we really must concentrate on are these two Republican seats in Georgia. That is really what they'll tell you. And I don't understand how smart people, because these are smart people, could not understand that if you do not sort out the fraud that took place, 3 weeks ago, if you don't take some kind of care about that, if you don't do something to change that or prove it, do you think for a second that the left is not going to steal this runoff election in January? It just defies logic. But there is a little kind of, there's a little poetic justice, at least for the media, at that rally, because the media had to rely on the Wi-Fi that was set up for them and for the rally. And so President Trump's team, this is again on Saturday night in Georgia, getting ready for the rally, and all the press comes from around the country all to cover this rally. The password that they had to enter in order to have access to the Wi-Fi that was set up there was rigged election. Rigged election. So that means that CNN, the camera guy, the reporter, they all had to enter rigged election in order to have access to the Wi-Fi. I think that's hilarious. I do. I just think that's really funny. I think sometimes we don't have enough of a sense of humor when we think about the bizarre things that they say and do. That reminds me of, I don't have it in front of me. I wish I did because I just thought of it. AOC talking about on the floor of the House about how Republicans have no idea how to wait tables, which is what she had done, and they would halfway through the shift be in the freezer crying because people were upset with them for not bringing fizzy water but bringing, you know, just regular water. And so Dan Crenshaw was speaking at a rally, I think, in Atlanta, or not in Atlanta, but in Georgia, and he was talking about, and he says, yes, you know, when we were in Afghanistan fighting up in the mountains, we would often get together and just cry because we were afraid that we would have served the wrong water to the Afghanistan fighters that we were fighting. Yes, there's a correlation, I'm sure. So anyway, we have to have our sense of humor when we deal with people who are so bizarre and really have lost their minds. I think just sanity. That's the one thing I think about. I've said this before and I'll say it again, that God brings order to our minds just as he brought order to this world. And so people need God. It's as simple as that. We need God to order our minds and to bring us sanity and give us clear thinking. And so let's pray to that end in each of our personal lives, and also just pray for those people that are living in such a confused state, and we need to set them straight. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.